In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. On the show, we've covered fringe topics such as the various ways and scenarios non-humans can live among us undetected, with past guests such as Andrew Hennessy, Carissa Conti, Mark Passio, and Kinnegan. We've also examined the idea of how human progress and evolution is at times illusory, because as one guest mentioned, those who predate on us don't see the need for the art and glory, values and technology that humanity can manifest. This is a subtle realm, a perspective that Don and Carol Croft and Matthew Deleuze, who after years of research, articulated the parasite-host relationship, describing how humans are continually set up to have their energies harvested. The awareness of these concepts has gained considerable traction in the last several years, and interestingly, a more aggressive effort to enslave and cull the human race is moving rapidly. Carissa Conti was recently on the show explaining how non-human types have likely risen to strategic positions in society to help orchestrate the engineered pandemic and create a false consensus, fooling those into getting the poison jab. We address the current societal and geopolitical turmoil in the context of non-humans among us, the alien abduction protocol, and related military intelligence connections with guest James Bartley. James has been researching these topics for 25 years. He's a protege of legendary alien abduction researcher Barbara Bartlick of Tulsa, Oklahoma. James has spent years conducting paranormal field investigations in California's high desert. He's also an independent historian with an emphasis on military history. He's given many lectures on his research worldwide, and he hosts the podcast The Cosmic Switchboard. You can find that on YouTube and thecosmicswitchboard.com. James, welcome to Another News.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
James, would you tell listeners some background on how you started out researching UFOs and alien military abductions?
Well, I've always had an interest in the subject as a boy. I always read subjects like about UFOs, about Greek mythology, psychic phenomena, what they now refer to as cryptozoology. I was always interested in Bigfoot and other cryptid-type creatures. So I was always open to the subject, and throughout my boyhood, usually with me in cycles, every 2, 3, 4 years, I would have a spate of psychic, and looking back now, with the benefit of hindsight, ET experiences as well. So I knew from a personal standpoint and also from a research standpoint that, you know, we had a big wide world and there was all these mysteries contained within it. So as far as how I got into the field, intermittently over time, like I said, I'd had a number of ET and psychic and astral experiences, but I really had no way to put it into context. But I just knew that I had, you know, a number of UFO sightings, right? Now, from a research perspective now, like I could say that if someone has had 2 or more, certainly 3 or more UFO sightings throughout their life in different areas, in different locations, I would say there's a strong possibility that person has had ET experiences, whether they realize it or not. You know, looking back, that was the case with me. A lot of psychic phenomena, astral experiences in high school where there were times where an external force, which I would perceive as a high-pitched tone or high-pitched sound of some kind, and it had an effect on my astral body, caused me to leave my body. And there was a number of nights in a row where, you know, if I didn't stay out of my body for a certain amount of time, I would never get back in and never get to sleep. So something was kind of forcing me to understand that, you know, we're more than just our physical body. So gradually over time, incrementally, my paradigms, my worldview had changed. So fast forward to 1990, September. Now in 1988, I'd gone through a series of experiences as well, but I really didn't have a way to quantify it or qualify it. But 1990 rolls around, and just as I'm about to return from Germany, I was there on a 3-month language study program. Just as I was about to return to California, about 2 weeks prior to that, I began to get that creepy prodromal feeling, like I felt I was being watched and under surveillance, and the creepy feeling of being watched. So I started sleeping with the lights on again in the guest house that I stayed at. And I started to get, I wouldn't say paranoid, but I would say skittish somewhat, right? Like there are areas along the Rhine River that are very, very dark, pitch black at night. And I would sprint through those areas at night just to get to where there was light, you know, like a street light or a street lamp. So that feeling was starting to come back. And anyway, I flew back to California, San Jose, California. And then just in a matter of weeks, I had a series of UFO ET experiences, culminating in a full-blown waking consciousness experience when three reptilian greys came into my bedroom, took me away up into their ship. It was a large ship, very large ship. And, you know, things kind of just went downhill from there. So that compelled me to really delve into the research. I had to do something to alleviate the fear. But there was an element of curiosity, I would say almost wonder, that these beings would even have an interest in me, right? So in order to gain some semblance of control and work through the fear issues, I really delved into the subject. So I would drive to the nearest shopping mall, to the B. Dalton's bookstore. I don't even know if they're around anymore. It was a popular chain back then. And I cleaned them out of every alien abduction book I could find. And then I realized that, yeah, this was in my life. And eventually, I moved from San Jose to San Diego, early 1990s, I would say 91, 92 time frame. And that was a major, major change in my life, because I went from a place that was a relative backwater of UFO research, at least it was back then. And to go to a place like the San Diego UFO Society, which was a highly regarded UFO research organization at the time, with links and connections to really good quality researchers and investigators all over the world. And the Southwest part of the U.S., big UFO hotspot, lots of researchers, lots of conferences. So that's where my research really took off. In the process, I became close friends and colleagues with Eve Lorgan, and later with Barbara Bartholik, who became my mentor. So that really is what kick-started me into this, was my own personal experiences, doing a lot of reading, moving from San Jose to San Diego, California, joining the San Diego UFO Society, and becoming part of the UFO scene. In the process, getting to know Evie Lorgan and other key researchers, including Barbara Bartholik.
Your family has a military background, is that correct?
Yes, my dad was a career Navy guy. He was in aircraft carriers for many years, and then prior to that, in the Vietnam era, he did two tours with the Brown Water Navy, going up and down the Mekong Delta in small patrol boats. So, yes, I was from a Navy family, and then later, I worked for the Navy in Naval Air Station North Island, San Diego, California. So for a large chunk of my life, I was definitely like in a naval military environment, so to speak, especially during my boyhood.
I see. And a lot of researchers certainly connect the UFO abduction scenarios to families with military backgrounds. One of your mentors, as you mentioned, was alien abduction researcher Barbara Bartholik. Would you tell listeners, please, about your work together?
Well, Barbara became my mentor, my spiritual mama. And in truth, we had reunited after a number of lifetimes having worked together in one form or another. What happened was I was in comms. I had become friends with Bob Urey, the late Bob Urey, who used to put conferences together in Philadelphia, right? In fact, I spoke at one of his conferences where I gave a eulogy for Dr. Carla Turner, who was also a friend of mine. In fact, Barbara Bartholik was the one who created the video presentation I would give after my eulogy. And getting back to how I got to know Barbie, I got to know Candy first, although not as well. Candace was her name. Candace Carla Turner, or Carla Candace Turner. I can't remember. Yeah, I think Candace was her first name with a K, and then I think she went by her middle name Carla, but her friends knew her as Candy. So I had known Candy off and on, meeting her at the conferences, corresponding with her, and that kind of thing. And she told me a lot about Barbara, her work with Barbara, how ecstatic she was to be working with such a highly regarded researcher as Barbara, and all the work that Barbara did behind the scenes. So I was kind of predisposed, if you will, to the fact that Barbara Bartholik was this top-level researcher working behind the scenes, focusing on reptilian alien abductions and a lot of the more hardcore aspects of the phenomena of the syndrome. So getting back to how I met Barbara, I had gotten to know Bob Urey, the organizer, he since passed away, of these conferences in Philadelphia. And just out of the blue, he mentioned that he had Barbara's phone number, and he'll give it to me. Because we got to talking about Carla Turner and Barbara Bartholik. Like, he said, oh, by the way, Barbara's my friend. He gives me her phone number. I call her up the following weekend. And, you know, from there, the rest is history. She and I became very close friends and colleagues. And Barbara was a very well-rounded individual. She was a former a runway model. She had her own arts-related TV show in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Her husband, who's a good friend of mine, Bob, was a highly regarded artist. They were both artists. They were both painters. Bob was a sculptor as well. Barbara used to work with Dr. Jacques Vallée many, many years ago, and Barbara had conducted a lot of field investigations, cattle mutilations, which she used to work what she called UFO invasion areas or invasion sites, where she said 1988, and I mentioned 1988 earlier, was a big year in that regard. She said that the tri-states area of northwest Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, just hundreds of people were being abducted, sometimes whole families, sometimes even whole neighborhoods in one night were being abducted by aliens. And Barbie would go to these locations, these communities, and start working with debriefing and doing hypnotic regressions with many of the people, and she amassed a huge database. So as we got to know one another, Barbie would confide in me a lot of her research findings. I would share with her what I have come to understand of the alien military scene in Southern California, particularly the desert Southwest. Evie Lorgan and I and other colleagues like Craig Bowers were doing a lot of field work in the high desert of Southern California, where there was a lot of reptilian, a lot of military activity, a lot of joint alien military reptilian activity. So I would be feeding back to Barbie what I was learning at my end, and she was briefing me on a lot of her findings. And because I was going through a spate of experiences back then too, I was able to call her up, and without any shame or any hesitation whatsoever, I would tell her everything that I could recall as far as my experiences, holding nothing back. And the beauty of that approach was Barbie, having been in the field, by the time I started working with her, she'd already been doing alien abduction investigations for over 30 years. So when I started telling her about my experiences, and then she's essentially debriefing me and giving me insight as to what's going on, and of course, she gave me free rein to come up with my own conclusions and my own impressions about what had happened. Barbie never tried to influence my thinking. And you can see this in some of the videos she played to audiences when she gave lectures. She would let the abductees tell their story in their own words without any coaxing from Barbara whatsoever. These are people giving their own impressions about their own experiences. And so Barbie was, I wouldn't say she was like a neutral sounding board, because Barbie had this tremendous capacity to love on you. She had this, what I call a cosmic combat medic, or a cosmic combat corpsman sensibility to her. She had a way of healing just by talking to you, healing others, calming them down. So many people would be drawn to her. Barbie never advertised. This was pretty much, internet was just getting started back then when I got to know her. And she never advertised, but yet this great spirit, call it what one will, always guided people to her that had experiences. People would call her out of the blue that serendipitously somehow got her contact information, right? And she would just talk to these people on the phone, calm them down. And when some were willing, then she would work with them. Either they'd fly in to Tulsa, or she'd be flown out to wherever they were. And so I was the beneficiary of this vast amount of information that Barbie had collated, distilled over 30-plus years. I'm adding my insights from my own perspective and from my own investigations, and my research web, if you will, was beginning to spread out, because we were really into phones back then. Some of us ran up enormous phone bills, but anyway, I'd gotten to know a number of researchers around America and in other places, so, networking being what it was, I was also keeping my finger on the pulse of other UFO hotspots around America. Not just my own particular bailiwick of Southern California and the desert Southwest. So for a number of years, Barbie and I worked closely. She and I did conferences together in Mississippi as well as in Memphis, Tennessee. And we really had a wonderful partnership. It was just a special time in my life to have had someone like Barbie as my mentor and my confidant. Someone who I could share with, and no matter, what degrading, humiliating, painful, embarrassing things happened to me the night before, ET-wise, I'd give her a full data dump in the morning. I'd thoroughly brief her, and then as more memories came back in the subsequent days, I'd call her up, and, we talk about them some more, and then she'd give me some insight, and all the while she's doing that healing thing on you, So, thank you for letting me share a bit about my experiences with Barbie, because that was a formative period of my life, and I am so thankful that however this was orchestrated from some higher divine providence, that Barbie and I should get together for a protracted period of time and be so close, friends and colleagues. Thank you for that.
At that time, you and Barbara and Candy and Evie and the other researchers, really, you guys were making breakthroughs. Now, as you mentioned, you worked with another well-known UFO abduction researcher, Carla Turner. She authored three books, Taken, Masquerade of Angels, and Into the Fringe. Would you give listeners some background about Carla and your work with her, please?
We're friends, and we would write to each other. I wasn't even on the internet back then. I had a work computer, but that was it. I didn't get my computer till, 93, 94 time frame. So, I was kind of relegated to snail mail letter writing back in those days. So I kept up a correspondence letter. I wish I hadn't lost the letters that she wrote to me. Those would be priceless right now, just as personal keepsakes. But you know, within the context of letters and however much one can cram into a letter, we would share information with each other. And then certainly when we met each other, the first time that I met Candy was at the International UFO Congress of 1993. That was an epic, epic conference. They don't make them like that anymore. Bob Brown was a personal friend of mine, the organizer and promoter of the International UFO Congress. And he would have some of the best researchers come in from all over the world. It was a week-long affair. You're probably familiar with it, but for your listeners that are not, the International UFO Congress was the big conference, along with the Eureka Springs Conference in Arkansas, and were the two biggest, best conferences in America every year. And when I looked at the roster of speakers and I saw Carla Turner and Elton Turner, her husband, was going to be there, I almost fell out of my chair, because by that point I'd read Into the Fringe. We were starting to get more and more reports, credible reports, of military abductions, not just people. My definition of a MILAB, a military abductee, is someone who first and foremost is a legitimate alien abductee. They have legitimate lifetime, multi-generational alien experiences, alien interest in their family, in their family tree. And that's the template, the basis, and then the military stuff kind of is overlaying on top of that, right? And Carla / Candy and her husband Elton were one of the first to come out in book form with their military experiences, military abduction experiences, surveillance. And I'd gotten to know a good friend of Candy's, Leah Turner. She was also one of the very first MILABs to go public, and I became good friends with Leah. And Leah would tell me a lot of Candy stories, right, before I finally met Candy in the 93 International UFO Congress. Leah Haley was also there. And I should point out to the listeners, back then, we had so much spook activity, all these spook intrigues at that conference. There was literal disinformation, not just disinformation, agents in the guise of researchers, but actual spooks, government agents, weird cult members that were following Leah Haley around and gaslighting her, right? So that was the background to what was going on there. And then also the fact that one could meet so many abductees from so many parts of the world. People were flying in from all over the world, not just from America. And so in that process, I got to meet Dr. Carla Turner. Now, I got to know Elton first, because Elton, I always gravitate to the book displays at any conference, and so there I am in one of the exhibition rooms looking at the books, and who's standing next to me but Elton Turner. So Elton and I start talking to each other. I had a correspondence, snail mail correspondence with Elton for a while. And, you know, he asked me, it was funny, because, well, Dr. Stephen Greer is out there giving a lecture, don't you? But you want to go out and listen to him instead of talking to me? And I said to him, well, believe me, I'd rather talk to you, Elton. And I told him, I don't know if I sounded dismissive about it, but I said, as far as Greer's CE5 activities, if he sent Philip Klass, who at the time was a notorious UFO debunker, I said, if he sent Philip Klass with a powerful flashlight up to a big UFO hotspot area, sooner or later, Class is out there flashing his flashlight up at the UFO, sooner or later they blink back at him, right? So I guess it was kind of dismissive towards what Stephen Greer was talking about. But the point being was, here I am talking to Elton Turner. Why would I want to talk to Stephen Greer? And then, as the week progressed, I'd run into Candy. They came late in the week, actually. They came more in the middle of the week. They only stuck around for 2 or 3 days. But I, you know, without being a nuisance, I spent as much time around Candy and Elton as I could, and then I volunteered to drive them back to the to the airport, because me and my friends were in charge of the shuttle vans, right? So, you know, transporting the speakers to and fro the hotel and the airport. So yeah, when I found out that Candy and Turner were leaving to fly out that morning, I think it was the day before the end of the conference, yeah, definitely I volunteered just to spend more time with her. And then we corresponded after that. And then some months down the track, there was a, your longtime old school listeners will remember a show called The Other Side. It was taped in Burbank Studios in the L.A. area, and it had to do with, you know, paranormal, ghostly, UFO-type subjects. And on this occasion, The Other Side was taping a segment with a panel of alien abductees, right? Many of them drawn from the ranks of well-known Southern California abductees, and I knew most of these people personally. And anyway, so I got in my car in San Diego, drove the three and a half, four hours through L.A. traffic to get to the studio, right, where I was going to be in the studio audience, and I was. Long story, but anyway, Candy Turner was one of the guests flown in by The Other Side. Now, Candy wanted reassurance before she got on the plane. She said, I want to make sure there are no debunkers there, right? Otherwise, I'm not coming. They lied to her. They said, of course, we're not going to have any debunkers, right? So Candy flies in, and she's sitting there. They introduce her after a while. She's sitting in the panel with the other abductees. And, of course, a lot of people know Candy herself was an abductee in a MyLab. So before too long, they bring out the notorious Michael Shermer, editor of PsyCop Debunking Magazine. That's a whole other story. But anyway, he starts his usual blarney, and then Candy abruptly gets up off the panel and walks out. Walks out. She was so pissed off. So that was my cue. I followed her to the green room. We renewed acquaintances, you know, gave each other a big hug. You know, she was really irked, you know, smoking cigarettes and just pissed off because they lied to her. They said there's not going to be a debunker there, and sure enough, there was a debunker. And so she stormed off the set. That was the end of her involvement. And see, that speaks to the level of integrity of Candy Turner and the level of integrity of Barbie Bartholik. Like myself, I have a similar attitude about it. I don't fraternize with people I perceive to be, quote-unquote, on the other side. When I go to a UFO conference and I see all these debunkers or disinfo agents or just poor investigators, pardon my Anunnaki, right? And I see someone, other people gravitating towards them and, you know, butting up with them. It sounds like I'm being judgmental. It sounds like I'm copying an attitude. But from the perspective of cosmic counter-espionage, I want to know who's out there, who knows what, who's saying what, right? And so, you know, with a similar attitude as Candy Turner, when I see these people hobnobbing around, you know, these people that I consider to be frauds, disinfo agents, that tells me all I need to know about them. Right. And so when I go to these conferences, I was not there to be everybody's friend. I only want to hang around people like me that have had similar experiences. And Candy Turner was one of them. So the significance of Candy Turner's work is she was the first and foremost protege of Barbie Bartholik. And when Barbie took a look at Candy, how brilliant she was. Right. A professor of Old English. She taught in England and she taught in North Texas, too, at the university level. And just how sharp and she was and how Candy had that ability to just zero in on key issues, right, and get to the kernel of the issue, the same way Barbie did. And so Barbie saw Candy as the perfect means to get Barbie's information out because Candy was already a polished public speaker. She was a university professor. Now she was an alien abductee with an attitude, okay, who also happened to be a great investigator in her own right, right? Because she learned from Barbie and then she started, I wouldn't say started branching off, but she started conducting her own investigations. And then when she had something really interesting come up or maybe ran into some challenges or issues about certain subject matter, she would consult with Barbie. Right, and they put their heads together. Okay, this is how we deal with this. And so Barbie worked with Candy to get her information out, and Candy became the medium, the vehicle for going out and giving this top-level information. And when she gave her performance in the International UFO Congress, that was a pivotal turning point for me. Remember, this is before I met Barbie. I met Candy first, Barbie later. And by that point, you know, and then to meet Candy and she's telling me, gushing about Barbie Bartholik, it created this image in my mind of, you know, Barbie up there in the Mount Olympus of, you know, UFO researchers, right? And for someone who just stayed behind the scenes, someone who did not court publicity, just worked silently behind the scenes like those unknown operators in the intelligence world, right? They're just out of sight, out of mind, but they're doing the real work. That's what Barbie was doing. Then she gets Candy to put the information out there. And some of the information Candy put out in that International UFO Congress lecture was truly hardcore. And this is information Barbie first developed. The underground processing plants of the reptilians and greys and other ET races, but commonly associated with reptilians and greys and various subspecies, if you will, of reptilians and other worker ETs in these. And also you will find military. Actually, that's the really horrifying aspect to it. In some of these processing plants where humans are being, cadavers being dismembered and bodily fluids extracted, et cetera, et cetera. There seems to be a human military element there, usually in a security capacity. So Barbie was given this kind of information, and you could hear a pin drop because it was so hardcore. And I was so troubled by it, Jeff. I was so troubled by the information because it had such a resonance of truth within it that I was vibing with, that I got up off my chair, walked around the lecture hall, and there was an empty seat next to my friend Sean Atlanti, who was the founder and director at the time of the San Diego UFO Society. And I sat next to him for reassurance, you know. He had an empty spot. I got up from mine. I went and sat next to him, and he understood. When I sat down, he just said something to reassure me, you know, because it was pretty scary stuff. And then later on, in my work with E.B. Lorgan, and also on my own, I had independently come up, made acquaintance and friendships with people who had been taken to the underground processing plants, right? So what's happening on the surface now has a direct correlation and a precedent with what happened underground, the processing, if you will, of humans as a literal food source. And then that industrial scale process beginning to manifest in various forms on the surface, until now stuff is coming out in legislation, coming out of the biotech firms. It's like, it's just a surface level, you know, at first blush, somewhat palatable, no pun intended, manifestation of what's going on underground. But when you have all these so-called health clinics and centers all over the place, and you know, people are going there and they're just getting seriously ill and dying, okay, then you get an idea of what's been going on in the underground bases all along. Now they've just brought all this stuff to the surface, and, you know, in the guise of, I guess, helping everyone and healing everyone and protecting everyone, allopathic medicine has just been killing people. The world over since Rockefellers and their ilk, reptilian hybrids themselves, took it over, right? But the point of relevance is that this stuff had been going on since time immemorial in these underground processing plants, as Barbie called them, processing plants. Evie Lorgan and some of the casework she did, we found the same syndrome amongst people, that they've been taken underground, they'd seen the bodies in the conveyor belts, they'd seen the bodies in the big vats, they'd seen the imprisoned humans in detainment, in cages, et cetera, et cetera. So we confirm for ourselves, this is what's going on. So I can't help but look at what's going on the surface now as an extension of what's been going on underground all along, since time immemorial. It's just the scale of it has gotten so big that it's literally burst forth from underground and is now, you know, manifesting all over the world. So on the surface, so I can say that my work with Barbie and my acquaintanceship and my researcher connection to Candy Turner was a formative process, part of the process for me to understand what's going on. They laid the groundwork for me and Candy and others, and then we just pretty much continued the legacy.
appreciate you going into detail there about two really important paranormal researchers. Dr. Carla Turner and Barbara Bartlick had, as you mentioned early on, helped to expose the deep underground basis through their work with alien abductees in my labs. And if you could talk just a bit more about that and where the awareness is today.
I first need to talk about what the environment was like back then, because there was a constant struggle, spiritual warfare manifesting in the form of these feuds and rivalries between the various UFO camps, right? You had the New Agers, who everything was love and light, and there was only warm and fuzzy ETs, and then there was the nuts and bolts type researchers who didn't want to hear about aliens at all. They just wanted to study craft and reports endlessly. And then there was the alien abduction field, where you had people like Dr. Richard Boylan. What was that other guy's name? Harding. Anyway, he was basically another UFO lover. I call these types alien human spokesmen, right? People like Richard Boylan, who was definitely hybrid himself back then. He used to flame Candy Turner and Barbie Bartlick unmercifully. Back then, it was internet bulletin boards, if you remember. It was just like forums and bulletin boards. There was no social media yet. But people like Richard Boylan would go on there and just say horrible things about Candy, saying that she was spreading fear, that she was wrong about everything. And, you know, this is the same Dr. Richard Boylan who used to unethically, I might add, skinny dip with his previously hypnotized female alien abductees in his hot tub, right? Talk about a master-slave relationship there. So the guy was a hypocrite on top of everything else. He just said, I had run-ins with Dr. Richard Boylan myself. So there were efforts to contain that information from within the UFO community itself because of this clique of Dr. Richard Boylan types, Stephen Greer types. One time, Barbie told me that she spent 4 hours lecturing and showing all these videos of people talking about their alien abduction experiences. And after 4 hours of that, Dr. Stephen Greer comes on afterwards, and the first words out of his mouth is, "That's all wrong. There are no negative aliens. It's only just military," right? So at one stroke, Greer tries to whitewash everything Barbie had proven conclusively with video taped interviews and regressions. And none of that was good enough for Greer, right? So that's what I mean. There was this conflict at work. People like Barbie, Candy, myself, Evie Lorgan, others, we were somewhat marginalized by, because without even realizing it, this coalition had formed between the New Age la-di-das on the one hand and all these Richard Boylan researcher, all aliens are good types. And then they just kind of worked at cross purposes to people like us, right? So that was the context. And on top of that, you have the surveillance, you have the disinformation, you have the disinformation artists, you have the harassment that a lot of us went through. Candy went through a lot of harassment, and as well as Elton. So did Barbie, Evie Lorgan, and I. A lot of interference, a lot of harassment. Because that information at that time was very unpopular all across the board. We're talking about underground processing plants. We're talking about a deep, dark secret. And it seemed to us that the fate of the human race, and not only that, too, but our souls, our very souls, were hanging in the balance. We understood this back then because something is happening at a global, indeed cosmic scale, right? And Barbie and Candy were one of the first to go around and point out the dangers in all this, that humanity was facing potentially an extinction-level event. We may just be eradicated, planet may be taken over, we may be reduced to slavery or turned into mindless automatons, all of the above. So it was a very unpopular concept that we were putting out back then. Okay, so what's happened today, and has been going on for several years now, is it's clear to me that there have been efforts to create a new military priesthood. This group of people, now we see it with this so-called threat reduction thing from the Pentagon with the Mickey Mouse budget of $22 million or whatever. That couldn't even pay for a spare bolt on the F-35, right? So you have people out there and showing these quite interesting naval aviation videos, infrared some of them, of UFOs and whatnot. But it seems to me to be yet another effort to keep the information from getting out of control. They want to keep it at that arm's length level. Okay, really interesting video. What does it mean? What are the implications, right? And they want to create this priesthood of usually ex-military people connected with the military who are the go-to guys, the ones who always get interviewed by the lamestream media, the ones who present themselves as the real whistleblowers. When, you know, I point out a lot of times, Sheriff George Wilcox at Roswell, his entire family was threatened, down to his grandkids. They said, if you breathe a word about this to anyone, because Sheriff George Wilcox saw the bodies, right? He may have even seen one of the living aliens that survived the crashes, if truth be known. And they said, we'll kill your whole family, including your grandchildren, right? So when people pop up nowadays saying, oh, well, I'm the real whistleblower, and I was part of this Pentagon outfit with a Mickey Mouse budget of $22 million, that doesn't hold water with me. When people like George Wilcox out there had their own whole family threatened back in 47, and you know the kind of stuff that happened to Candy Turner, you look at John Ford, he was a political prisoner, essentially. He's still languishing in a psych ward because he investigated those UFO crashes in Long Island, and he was set up and framed, right? They basically labeled him a domestic extremist back then, which is the label they're trying to pin on a lot of people today. Well, they did that to John Ford of the Long Island UFO Network, and he's still languishing as a political prisoner, essentially, right? So, yeah, I think I can be forgiven for looking askance at some of these people who try to present themselves as woo-woo whistleblowers today, right? When we know that not just sighting reports, not just videos, no matter how compelling, no matter how much they show, when we know that deep black elements of the military and the aerospace corporations have had alien hardware for decades, and they've been back engineering this technology all across the board from a technical engineering standpoint, from a physics standpoint, also from a biotech standpoint, a biomed standpoint, because these EBEs, extraterrestrial biological entities, these corpses that they've had over the years, and also the interactions that they've had with various ET groups, they've come into possession of alien, for lack of a better term, organisms, alien DNA. What they're, you know, the whole germ/exosome debate today, well, they've had alien germ/exosomes for a long time now, which they could have and probably have weaponized, right? So when I see these Pentagon experts from this Mickey Mouse Pentagon outfit trying to be the experts on the subject, they're just creating another priesthood, the go-to guys that the media always go to, but it'll never, I repeat, never get to the level of the underground processing plants. There's a large, there's not only a human trafficking network run for the most part by reptilian-human hybrids, Draco-reptilian hybrids, manifesting in all its forms, elements within the military-industrial complex, covens, et cetera, et cetera. Not only that, there's an off-world element to that, where countless humans have literally been taken off-world as human chattel, as slaves. This has been described by a number of people that I regard as highly credible. So, and then what they've done also is, and this may be upsetting to many people, but I'll say it anyway. The MyLab community, I wouldn't say it's been hijacked, but there's been a lot of falsehoods and disinformation seeded throughout the MyLab community. Because when we first started investigating MyLabs, Candy Turner was one of the first to come out, Leah Haley, Katarina Wilson came out with her book. And then living in Southern California, I came into personal contact with a number of people having MyLab experiences, and I began having MyLab experiences. And in truth, my MyLab experiences in the early, mid, late 90s and going forward into the 2000s, intermittently over time, they were just a continuation of things that had happened in childhood when I was taken to some of these military facilities and, doctored up, if you will, and manipulated in some ways from, medically, so to speak. And so what we have is this seeding of all this bad information in the MyLab community. And in effect, what it did, Jeff, was it glamorized the whole subject. It made it seem like it was all a big, Marvel Comics kind of a Comic-Con kind of thing, right? Now, in the old days, and I don't want to put a victimization slant on it because we didn't see ourselves as victims. We were more pissed and irate than anything, right? And to be sure, there was an element of fear there when deep black elements of the military kidnap you and then they take you to a facility and start shooting you up with drugs that you don't know what the drugs are. But you get drugged out and all this other stuff goes on. Yes, that's a cause for worry, right? Especially for some people that I knew where it happened quite frequently in the high desert of Southern California and elsewhere. And Candy Turner came out with that classic book, Taken, about eight women who've each had their own MyLab experiences, right? So that book should be on the bookshelf of every serious alien abduction researcher on the planet, Taken, if you can find it. So we went from there where it was kind of an us and them mentality. What the hell are they doing to us? I don't want to be one of their minions. I don't want to be one of their soldiers. And then it morphed from there to, oh, I'm a super soldier, right? I'm a super soldier. Well, if you got all these woo-woo super abilities, Captain America, why don't you do something with it, right? Why don't you, regain 50% of your powers and then start turning this thing around, right? Instead of sugarcoating it and putting a fine gloss on it when it's actually nothing but exploitation, mind control, abuse. So many of these female MyLabs have been abused in the context of their underground and off-world experiences, right? I know women that have been gang raped by military personnel and scientific engineering personnel in the underground bases, and this has happened to women off-world too, right? Taken up to the moon, to bases there, and taken elsewhere, and likewise gang raped by humans. So that's the reality. I'm not taking a glass half empty perspective on it. I'm looking at it from the perspective of this is what we know is going on, and there's nothing glamorous or chic about it. We need to turn this thing around. And if a lot of these MyLabs really do have these abilities, they need to get their egos under control and then start using their abilities to turn this thing around, right? Because if all the MyLabs at one go reacquired even 50% of the metaphysical capabilities, which we know they have, they could turn this thing around, right? Big time. But as was the case in the alien abduction field, where you had these cliques, always pushing the warm and fuzzy ET story and shaming and guilting people for having a negative experience or having trauma, right? Perish of thought, you should be traumatized by these experiences. And then what these heartless, callous, intolerant New Agers would say is, oh, you're just spiritually unevolved, you're a spiritual retard. You don't understand the benefits that you're deriving from these contacts with these ETs, right? For a long time, Evie and Lorgan and I were basically pariahs in Southern California. She and I and a handful of others were the only ones that we could confide in. We were our own little group amidst all these New Agers, amidst all these people that were hostile to the whole concept of reptilians, military abductions, etc., etc. So what we're seeing now is more and more, and the people have been pre-programmed, if you will, they call it predictive programming, with so much of what comes out of Hollywood and cinema and what have you. But the fact of the matter is, there are countless people that have had experiences of ETs, reptilians, military, in underground bases, also off-world at times. And these people have been exploited, they've been manipulated, their surface world has been turned upside down in many cases. Financially, they've been hit, they get harassed, they get gang-stalked. So there's nothing glorious about a lot of this stuff. And then at night when they get access, they get utilized in ops, which seem to advance this whole agenda, which in their normal surface waking consciousness is what's the whole system holding them down, right? So in a very real way, you know, from an alter personality, mind control perspective, aspects of them are being used to create even a more oppressive world for themselves, right? When they're not in that mind controlled state. So that's how deep this runs. And as far as a level of awareness, I'm gratified to know that a lot of these people that have really delved into the biotech aspects of this, right? And myself and my colleagues were onto this a long time ago. Not many people realize it. And Evie Lorgan was in the biotech, biochem field. And I knew a lot of people over the years that worked in various aspects of the biomed field, from fertility clinics, IVF, all the way, you know, across the spectrum to people that worked in the vaccine manufacturers and what have you. And so over the years, and also looking at it from a deep black medical perspective, the MyLab aspects and what I've gleaned through my own independent studies of when they brought over some of the German era medical specialists from the Third Reich and put them to work in places like Randolph Air Force Base and Texas and other places. And also the whole MKUltra Monarch aspect to it. And that gave me an idea, a background to what's going on today. So more and more of these researchers, although they may not publicly profess an awareness of the reptilian overlordship agenda, they're speaking in terms which are comfortable to them. Some of them have a Christian perspective, so they're, you know, openly talking now that this is completely inhuman, a demonic thing going on. It has nothing to do with humanity. The main players aren't even really, that we see on TV, are not even really human. And it took a while for the coin to drop there. But that was key. I look at these perps on TV as the reptilian human hybrids, their Draco human hybrids, you know, probably with other ET DNA in the mix as well, right? So I see them as an entirely different species. They may have the outward appearance of being human, but I can see with their musculature, facial structure, energy, etc., etc., no, they're a bloody hybrid. And we're all hybrids in truth, but they're hybrids of the wrong sort, right? The ones that are behind or at least pushing publicly this genocidal agenda. So more and more people in the surface level, if you will, research fields, especially now with all the science, the real science being done to expose the dangers of these so-called treatments, more and more of the latter, even Stu Webb on Red Voice Media openly talks about how these rulers are reptilians and lizard people and stuff. I was just so gratified to hear that. Dr. Madej, she's done tremendous work on exposing this gene therapy.
Well, James, you really elaborated on some very important key issues and gave some important background here for listeners about where you had gained your knowledge in research. And I remember Carla Turner in the San Diego lecture that you recorded mentioned that she is not saying that all of these entities are evil or bad. She is only focusing in on the ones that abduct. She stopped it there. It's really important to mention as well. That was part one of the interview with James Bartley. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.